PetrolBox is a monthly service made specifically for the automotive enthusiasts. Each month, they carefully select items, including tools, detailing supplies, garage gear, apparel, stickers, publications, all to be sent right to your doorstep. It's a curated selection of the latest and greatest gear in the industry, and there's two different levels to choose from. The PetrolBox Basic costs less than $20 a month, while the PetrolBox Premium gets you even more gear for $39.95 a month. Check them out at mypetrolbox.com, and you can always use the code OVERCREST at checkout to get $6 off. CSF Cooling has always been at the forefront of quality products at a fair price, with a rich history stretching over seven decades. They provide the best high-performance and OEM Plus cooling systems on the market today. CSF offers over 3,000 different cooling applications for the most popular makes and models on the road, from classic copper brass radiators for Land Cruisers, Jeeps, and Datsuns, to vintage 80s Mercedes, BMW, Audi, and of course Porsche platforms, all the way up to our newer vehicles. Check out their expanding Classic Series lineup, and most notable and exciting is, of course, their new offering for air-cooled 911s. Check them out at csfrace.com or on social.
On what?
Social.
Say that again? On what?
Social. On social.
Social.
It's
all
like
right.
It's like uncooked social. It's sushi social.
All right. Let's go. You ready? Hey guys, welcome to Overcrest. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jake.
Yes, you are, dude. This feels pretty good. This feels pretty
good. Good to be back.
It is good to be back.
We were gone for a couple weeks there, turns out.
Yeah, we had this this other event that we were doing.
It's
called
true.
The Overcrest Rally.
Overcrest Rally.
And I told Jake,
Jake. It was all consuming.
We have a lot of listeners now. We have a lot of people that listen to the podcast, but I know
nearly 10.
So I know at least 3 of those 10 people have not listened to some of our older stuff. So I was going to have you upload some of the stuff that we'd released in the last 500 episodes. Of the Overcrest podcast. Yeah. We might be there. We were like 450 a little while ago. We might be getting close to 500 episodes.
That's a lot.
It is a lot. And I was just going to have you guys.
You were like, oh, yeah, yeah.
Just upload some new stuff. Yeah, like, just kidding.
I'll do that.
And yeah, but we didn't do that. So sorry, guys. Sorry. Hopefully you guys got to enjoy the back catalog a little bit. I saw downloads were up. I'm guessing that's people just being excited about things, even though we just need to do rallies all the time, then we don't need to create any more episodes, because every time we do a rally, the episodes go way up. So if we do a rally every weekend, we don't need to record the podcast.
I don't
anymore.
Think that is at all how that works. Not
it
at
is
all.
A little bit. Okay, so in 15 minutes, Jeff is going to hop on. So we'll probably bring him in here live, and we're going to talk about the rally when he gets on. But I wanted to talk about an experience that I had yesterday, Jake.
Yes, I didn't know this was going on until
hey,
you.
Can you move your camera down a little bit? You look shorter than normal. See how much taller I am than you.
Yeah,
you just
I
look
guess.
A little, or sit up straight.
That's all it was. I was doing a little
You're slouching.
Slouch.
I had a great experience yesterday. So one thing that I do that most people don't know that I do because I don't talk about it because of, and I don't post the photos and I don't post the videos. I don't do any of that stuff because it's always private. You know, it's private collections. You're dealing with high net worth individuals. And I shoot a lot for auctions, like Sotheby's, Mecum, all these different
companies. So someone is showing or like selling their car.
They're selling their car. And basically I get to go and take pictures of the car. And I usually do stuff for social. So some of the stuff, I mean, there's been a lot of cars that I've shot. Old Ferraris, and I don't talk about it because it's private.
Right.
But I've got to talk about this one. This was like a bucket list thing that I didn't know that I wanted to do. Okay. Like, I had no idea that I would enjoy this as much as I did. Because
what is this?
Okay, so I've ridden in a lot of cars.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. I've ridden in a lot of cars, been around a lot of cars, driven a lot of cars, very fast Porsches. Mainly is kind of where the exotic or rare cars that I've driven are usually old Porsches or like a GT2 RS, some GT3, all this stuff.
Performance Porsches, right.
Yeah. Which in like our world of people that listen to the podcast is not that special because a lot of guys have GT3s and stuff like that. But for
sure.
me,
and you see
as a regular guy,
else. You see them. Yeah.
Yeah. As a regular guy that is doesn't even have, you know, I have no car daily driver. None. But we can talk about that too, maybe after we talk to Jeff. But I did find a daily driver. But right now I have none.
I don't know if you bought it already, but yes.
I'm working on it. Okay, so I get an email from the auction company. I'm going to mention no names, locations, anything with this, because I'm very concerned about privacy. But I don't think the owner will mind me talking about this.
You're not concerned. You're cognizant of it. Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So the cars that I shot yesterday were a Ferrari 488.
Okay. Convertible thing. That's the newest one.
It's a twin turbo V8, 700 horsepower. So we go out and it's yellow. Which is honestly tough.
Did
this
you
time of year,
send it to my wife?
No, but I should send her a picture. I didn't really send too many photos of this stuff to anybody. Again, conscientious.
Right.
So it's a yellow Ferrari with a it's a one of one.
Can you tell me what makes it one of one? At least
off air, I will tell you. Off air. Oh, okay. Fuck it. Who gives a shit? Okay, so it has.
I mean, I assume it's just some certain spec, right? Like the way it was.
It's a certain spec. It's an interior color that. So it was a one of one with blue Alcantara floor mats and interior. So I was like hovering my feet above the floor mats because it's Alcantara.
Just because you didn't
floor mats.
Get it dirty.
It was a cool car. Yellow. I'm not a big fan of yellow cars, especially this time of year. It's very difficult to
yellow on
shoot
blue.
Yellow. It looked okay.
Choice.
It looked cool. I think it. Well, there's lots of yellow on blue. Think of like Michigan college football team or.
I've never seen a car with a bright blue interior that is yellow on the outside.
Well, that's true. Yeah, it was black seats, blue. It was interesting to be sure. I don't think the owner ordered it this way, but anyway, so we drove that thing around and I took pictures of it. And yellow's tough this time of year because there's lots of leaves that are yellow.
Right.
So it was a difficult shoot.
Either it doesn't look good because there's not a lot of contrast, or it's like really cool because it pulls all the yellow out of the scenery.
That's kind of what I went for because I didn't really have a choice because it's full prime here right now. And because these cars are always, they don't get driven a lot because they're part of collections.
Right. I can see that.
So you don't want to, it's not like, hey, let's take this thing anywhere in Minnesota and shoot it. It's not that kind of thing. It's we need to shoot this thing for the auction usually it's by 5 minutes ago because the car left already. It's very, very like time sensitive stuff.
Yes. The trailer's waiting. You need to get a shot of it before it goes on the trailer.
Yeah, got a little bit of a ride in the Ferrari on the way back to pick up another car. Yeah. And I was like and it was really the way I could describe the 488 was very snappy. Right? It was very snappy. It felt like the steering ratio was really quick. I could see him when I was like directing him where I wanted the car. He would move the steering wheel like and the thing would go whoop. I mean, it had a very quick ratio steering rack.
Sure.
I'm sure if I would have said, can I drive it? He would have said, yeah, but I don't do that.
Sure.
Anyway, so that was a cool car. It was fast. And there's 700 horsepower. I was like, wow, this thing really moves. So then we drive back to pick up the other car, which is
Did you know what this other car was? Like, this
of course.
Part of the whole shoot. Okay.
Of course. And it was a Bugatti Veyron, which I could... You know, before this, I could kind of take it or leave it. I wasn't really like a Bugatti Veyron fan.
Sure.
Talking to Aki Manscheid, the guy that designed the car, writing that article for 000 with him was really cool. So I did learn a lot about why that car existed.
You probably came to appreciate it more.
Yeah. And one of the things he said is that this was Bugatti or Volkswagen Company or whatever, or just car engineering in general. This was the last chance in their mind to build something like the Veyron, which is no expenses spared. Everything we've learned, all the engineering, everything, all of it, the collective knowledge of 100+ years of motoring in a vehicle, all of it right there before everything transitions into a different realm, right? Of hybrids, electric, stuff
EV,
like that.
Hybrid, et cetera. Isn't it true that every Bugatti they made, they lost a ton of money on? Because it was considered for Volkswagen just a loss leader. I remember they compared it in some publication to, you know, some manufacturers go to Formula One and they lose money at it, but it's all a marketing expense. And that's how they looked at the Bugatti from Volkswagen perspective, is it was a loss leader as a brand Halo car almost.
I can't imagine that's untrue. I think they extrapolated the Veyron into the Chiron too, and I'm sure they're trying to recoup some of the costs of designing and engineering the car. Anyway, so first thing I noticed, I get in this. Okay, first of all, the way a Veyron looks, this one, normally they're black with blue.
Sure.
Right? They're black, the two-tone looking things. This one was like gray and silver.
Huh.
And the pearl and the silver in this paint was some of the most beautiful. It was the most beautiful paint I'd ever seen. It was so good, and it showed so well in the sun. And they're small but big at the same time. They're very wide. It's almost like a
Their proportions are strange.
A little bit, but I mean, it's got to do what it needs to do to stay on the ground at 250 miles an hour. So there's a lot of probably some design. I think it's really interesting to one thing I wasn't interviewing Akim about the Veyron, but one thing I would have asked him if I was. Is what were the challenges of designing this car visually,
right?
With the trade-off of the engineering of it, it needs to move through the air at 250 or 270, 267 miles per hour, whatever the sport one ended up doing. What were the challenges of that? How do you make something still look good? Because if you look at, there's lots of other aerodynamic cars out there that look like dog shit, like a Prius. Right, that's a super aerodynamic car. Slips through the ground or through the air really well.
Yeah.
Looks like a flying turd going
and
through
I know
the.
With you know a lot of these cars that are super hyper high performance, a lot of it is cooling and air management when it comes to not just aerodynamics, but also like how do you get enough air into the motor to A, make power and B, to cool everything? Because that thing has something ridiculous like 16 different radiators and different
there's all kinds of radiators and fuel and. Bunch of turbos and a lot of pistons, you know, W16 engine.
16 of them, turns out.
It's. I don't want to get into, like, the specs of the car because it's boring.
No, yeah, we've all seen it. And honestly, let's be honest, the Veyron is not a newer car. That is an old car now.
Yeah, when did they make those? When did the Veyron come out? Let me look.
Was it, like, it was before 2010, 2007?
Let's look it up here. Veyron, you got a Veyron EB 16.4, 2005, Jake.
Yeah.
That's old.
That's close
18 years old.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, so it's 18 years old.
We don't need to go through the specs. But I want your impressions of it.
Okay, so the impression I have is I'm always very, very like, when I'm working around these cars, I'm like, hey, can you open the door for me? Hey, can you do this? And he's like, you know what,
you
dude,
have
just...
basically a shot list, right?
Yeah, of course. But he's like, just do it, dude. It's a car. You know, just get in, turn the key. It's a car, right?
Did that
so just get
you
into it. So
that,
the first
mindset or attitude from some of these
more
collectors?
Often than not that's the case. Okay. More often than not, there was a time where there was a Ferrari 330 GTC, which is probably about a $600,000-$800,000 Ferrari, old like late 60s, and the guy's like, "Here's the keys, take it wherever you want, shoot the car." So I'm driving this gated shifter 330 GTC, and. Felt pretty cool. A little underwhelming in the power department, but the sound the way, and just like the snick of the shifter was great. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that one I actually got to drive. Made me nervous.
Oh,
I think Jesse ended up shooting the rolling shots because I was driving
that's
the car.
Cool.
So she shot the rolling shots of that one. Anyway, so he's like, just get in, just push the start button, turn the key. It's okay. It's just a car. Just do it.
Yep.
All right.
Love that.
So I get in. Slip into the passenger or the driver's seat, turn the key on, and what's the first thing I notice? It has the same odometer, park drive, neutral, whatever, as like a Passat.
Oh, the gear selector indicator.
The gears, like the display where it shows
the indicator on the. Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, it's. I'm like, wow, this is. It's a Volkswagen.
Yeah,
it's basically a really really fast Phaeton or something. You know, it's basically what it is.
Yeah, because the interiors they've always been interesting to me because they don't look like a high-performance interior. It's a luxury interior.
I would argue with that.
That's how would you?
It,
okay.
It
again,
felt...
You have more experience, obviously.
When you're sitting in it and you look, you've got the big rev counter in the middle. You've got the speedometer on the right. And on the left is a horsepower gauge.
That's
goes from 0 to 1,000.
Yeah.
And you can watch the... I mean, that is a flex right there.
That's the opposite of like the mile per gallon, like eco gauge.
Yes, this was. I mean, just
they should have both, and they just go opposite of each other.
Oh man, it's cool. So you've got that. All the gauges are very nice. Every button feels, excellent.
Solid. Yeah.
But here's what happens when you start the car up. You put the key in, turn the key on, and then there's a big start-stop button, like an aluminum, and it's got a really good feel to it. You push it in, and it makes like this whirring sound. It doesn't like, normally a combustion engine car does what, Jake? Yeah, it doesn't do g-g-g-g. It just goes, and it sounds, I've watched them like start up a jet. Is kind of what it sounds like.
What do you attribute that to? Like, why is it different? It has to just be a standard starter. Like, it can't be a
does
different
it though?
Mechanism.
I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. Maybe it's a flywheel that spins up with an electric motor already attached to it, and then it just drops the flywheel out of the engine and starts it. I have no idea. I don't know. But it.
I know
it
a
does
lot of
not...
diesels have an air starter. Have you heard of this?
Where
usually it actually uses compressed air to start it because it needs so much torque to turn it over. These like big diesels. I doubt that's what this is. But
no, and some of those diesels have like compression release too, where they have like a little thing that you pull out, and you can even start it on gasoline and then turn the gas off, push the thing back in, and then run it on diesel. Diesels are cool, Jake. There's lots of cool things about diesels.
Like them. Nah.
Anyway, so this thing goes, it just goes, and it's very strange. But you feel like behind you, there is the way I was trying to think of how to explain it is a few different ways. It feels like a church of engineering and a church of machinery where everything is
something
like, if you imagine a congregation
revered,
singing with the choir with the preacher on the top, and they're all singing the same song, but it's all this myriad of different things happening at once, just orchestral. And it kind of brings me back to what Akeem said is like, hey, we built the most amazing machine that's ever been built. In a car, the most amazing machine. And when you think of it from that perspective, you go, all of this was, nothing was happenstance. It sounds exactly like this when you start it on purpose. This is what it sounds like. Okay, so then you start to drive away a little bit and you realize how like dense the car is. It's extremely
it's
dense.
It is a light car.
No, it is a giant lead brick. I mean, it's not. It's made of aluminum and all these special materials, but it just feels... Right. It feels like a celestial meteorite that's made of like all these insanely rare materials, like shooting through the sky. Just this dense, huge, like Pluto is the mass of Pluto is insane, right? It just feels like it has this massive. What? What's the problem,
Jake?
It's
just a weird analogy.
I don't care
that you're driving Pluto down the road.
Well, it kind of feels that way. My point is that it's very dense feeling.
Sure.
It has like a celestial denseness to it, and then you have the engine behind you. And for some reason, in your mind, you imagine the engine is the entire car behind you.
Right, yeah.
It just feels like it's the entire thing behind you, just pushing you along. So we go and we do the shoot, and it turns out great, and it's a beautiful car. And, you know, we did it where it lowers and puts the air brake up and back and put it down. We get all the photos of it. And we go to drive back, and I'm kind of sitting there in the car, and I'm just waiting, right? I'm just waiting for this guy to just...
You're like, come
so
on.
So just as you're driving around, there's... it's not a noise. It's not noisy, okay? So I want to differentiate between how loud things are, because it's not a quiet car. You're not riding around in a Rolls Royce, okay? It's not a luxurious...
What I would expect is it's like very luxurious and... Okay.
No, it feels more like a GT car in a way.
Interesting.
It's not quiet, but it is also not noisy, because I think of noise as kind of like a negative connotation. If something's noisy, you want to turn it off or turn it down.
Yeah, I gotcha.
But it is loud, and there's so much going on behind you, I think, with however many water pumps are running, four turbos. I mean, imagine the chains and everything is right behind your head. Everything is, and it is all, it's like a freight train, but if a Swiss watchmaker made the engine for the train, you know what I mean? Because
very precise, but there's a lot going on.
There is a lot going on, and you can tell, even if you roll into it at like 2000 RPMs, it's like, it's almost like it's taking a breath.
Yeah.
It's like, it's going, it's inhaling and getting ready to go. You can feel like all those turbos and all the power and all the torque. And of course he did it. And he laid into it for probably about, I'm going to say, 6 or 7 seconds.
Okay.
And I think I think from what I looked at the speedometer, it was from 40 to 150. Before, and I could barely pick my head up off the headrest.
Yeah, because that's a lot of acceleration.
It was sheer power and torque like I've never felt. I felt a lot of like high strung, like snappy, high horsepower, single turbo, big, huge, huge power cars. But something about the effortlessness of this,
right? Did it seem
was what was absolutely incredible?
Is it the opposite of dramatic in that sense?
No, it had the most amazing sense of occasion when it was doing it. It was like it was what it was meant
to do.
That's
what you would, like, that's what you would say about like an EV. Like an EV is extremely capable of acceleration and going very quick, but it has zero.
I hate to use like the cliche of, I have to watch for Jeff. I'm assuming he's going to be in here any minute.
He's wanting to come in.
I don't see him here yet. Once he's here, I'll let him in.
He's looking for the link.
Ah, okay. Well, he'll figure it out. I imagine like you're listening to like a soft song, and this is cliche, and I'm sorry, but this is
the
really truly what it felt like.
Chris, the crescendo.
It was.
It's a mechanical symphony. The crescendo of it.
It truly was. It was like if you had like a song that was playing softly, but you could see and feel the potential of the orchestra in front of you. You could see and feel, especially knowing what that's like. You know, going to a symphony or an orchestra, and you know what could be coming, and then that. Composer goes, and then fucking everybody just like plays at the max volume, but it's just like, holy shit. And you know, the whole auditorium is made for it, right? The whole auditorium is made for the sound that you're receiving, and everybody's and absolutely an expert at what they're doing. And it was just, the power was incredible. Incredible. It was a life-changing experience about what it feels like to drive something that is so particular in the purpose that it was built for, which is, it is an expose of human engineering and power and motoring over the last 100 and something years. And it is incredible. And I don't think we'll have anything like that ever again. Because I don't care how fast your EV is. I don't care. I don't care if it makes 4,000 horsepower and 7,000 pound-feet of torque at negative 10 RPMs. I do not care. It doesn't have the sense of occasion and the engineering that it took to build and execute and experience a Veyron. It was the next thing is I got to drive one. That's my next experience.
This was the ride along.
Yeah, I guess I talked to a couple other people that have driven one and they're always just like, yeah, it's just 140, 170 anytime you want.
Just
right now,
nothing. Doesn't feel like.
Yep, let's go. No, and like you don't even have to have the wing come up. You don't even need it. Like it's just like, wow. Oh man, it was. It was extremely special. I just wanted to share that before you. Now, where's Jake? Where's Jeff?
I'm here. My name's Jake.
I know you're here. Oh, yes. There's a ladybug on my mouse. Look. Is that good luck?
I don't think that's actually a ladybug. I think that's the like ladybug imposter.
It's got ladybug beetle spots on it.
Yeah, but you realize that there's like an invasive species in the Midwest called a Japanese beetle that looks exactly like a ladybug. I don't know.
This one has the eyes and everything. Like the little white eyes.
Eyes in
there. Oh, buddy. I think he's dead. All right. Where's Jeff? Send him a text message with the link.
He's been texting us. He says, how do I get in?
All right. I'm gonna mail him the
You're
link.
Mail him.
So
the U.S. Post Office.
To Jeff.
Okay. So Jeff is, of course, our third partner on the Overcrest Rally. And if you don't know...
The biggest news about Jeff, just tell him that I emailed him the link, if you could. I don't have any text messages or anything.
Okay.
Is that he shaved his mustache.
It's kind of sad, yeah.
It is. You're the last man standing. I tried to do a mustache. Jesse, you said no. She said no mustache. No.
And mine's the opposite. Nikki actually likes it on me, so she doesn't want me to shave, which, whatever.
So what did you think of the rally, Jake? What was your big takeaway? How did you feel?
It was it was big. Like there was a lot. I think we delivered quite the experience on a different scale.
What was your most memorable experience from the rally? Running out of gas in the van?
That was memorable, probably not the most memorable. Although, speaking of the van, I push that thing really, really hard up the mountain to Anthony Lakes. Like, people behind me were like, oh, what are you doing? Because I was leading a bunch of cars.
Yeah.
And I was quite proud that a couple of them were like, oh, yeah, it was getting icy in corners. And I'm like, yeah, I'm from Minnesota. I know what black ice looks and feels like. I'm no problem. They're all like, ah. And then the rear stepped out, and I had to counter steer the van. And then I toasted the brakes, and the rotors are completely warped because that was my highlight, probably. Was
Yo! Jeff.
Mr. Jeff.
We were just saying that how disappointed we were that you shaved your mustache off.
Blew my ears out. Wow.
Yeah.
He does that. So, we had a rally.
We had a rally. It happened.
All right, dude. Thanks for coming on. We'll see you next time. We'll see you later. We were just talking about the van. And how special the van was, and that Jake had been hustling it up the icy mountain.
Yeah, Jake, that was a lot of fun.
Jake had a lot of fun with that van. I think that's actually the big win of the rally this year for Jake, is that he got the van, he got to work on it.
I was at one point, you know, driving from location to location. You happened to be along the rally route, and there were a few 911s with me up ahead. And I can guarantee I had more fun than they did trying to keep up with them in the corners, because there's something to be said about, doesn't matter what you're driving, if you can see the line that they're taking, you know what I mean? And be like, oh, okay, the road goes there. I know exactly, you know, how quickly you can go. And it was a lot of fun hustling that, trying to keep up with sports cars. And I did enjoy that a lot.
There's a big difference between leading and following on a rally.
Oh, big
like time. I was following Drew Manley mm-hmm. from Cool Collective.
Right.
And I could follow him pretty easily, but I guarantee you I could not lose Drew. There's no way I would be able to lose Drew. He's too good of a driver. But following, I can see, you know, you can kind of see where the car is going. You can see around corners a little bit because you can see the behavior of the person in front of you, as long as you trust them. Otherwise, you're going to end up in a little pile of metal at the bottom of a cliffside with them.
Yeah, that wouldn't be good either.
Unfortunately.
Okay. So regardless.
One of the things I wanted to talk about with Jeff now that he's here.
Yeah. While
Jeff's here. And we'll kick them out later. But one thing that was really successful and really unique is the roadside curiosities that everybody got to experience. And I kind of wanted to get your thoughts, Jeff, and on the inception of that and what it was and how you curated that event. Because Jake and I were really kind of on the other side of the curtain with that, and you kind of ran free with it. And I wanted to just hear a little bit about that. I'm sure other people would love to hear as well your process.
Yeah, it was super fun. And I definitely was excited to see how many people stopped and had fun and just enjoyed it. And yes, Chris and Jake, you guys both like let me run with that and stay out of my hair, which was nice of you both. I think for a while, Chris and Jake didn't really know what was going on. And there was a little bit of nervousness what is this thing? We did early on. I know you guys were involved. We had Joshy Robots serve as a little bit of just a guide on, you know, how we could kind of brainstorm this thing up, and really wanted to come up with a roadside stop that didn't feel like something born out of a meeting or a corporate partnership or anything like that. It was just something that felt organic that you would maybe find on the side of a road. And there would be all kinds of trinkets and oddities, things that you'd want to purchase. And so we really started out with the idea of a gypsy / hippie kind of roadside tent store. And we invited.
Where did that come from? Where did that idea to do like the roadside tent and kind of like the feel of it, the tent with the rugs and the pillows, where did that come from? How did you stumble on that? Or maybe not stumble upon, how did you kind of come to that idea?
Yeah, well, we ideated a lot about how we wanted this to be something that was welcoming to new drivers and old drivers, not necessarily to be something that people who have been in the driving or car scene for 20 years felt like it was a very closed off kind of, yep, this is what we always do. We wanted it to feel a little bit weird, a little bit open-ended, and that new people, even new to Overcrest or new to rallying or new to driving, would kind of walk in and see some really fun things And so there was stuff in there, I think, for everyone. Guys who've been driving for a long time, weirdos, just a little bit of everything for everyone. Things like, you know, gas cans, Jerry cans with Jerry Seinfeld's face on it, like, and some great license plate frames for slower cars. You know, this car may be old, but it also is slow. The hat you're wearing right now, Chris, Speed Parts made that and sent it. So we wanted some things that just felt like they were a little more off the beaten path. And so the product also, more or less, the product reflected that it was off the beaten path. The location was off the beaten path, and the concept was off the beaten path. And you know, we have so many great things going on within the rally and the experience that I think this was just kind of one more bit of flavor that people weren't expecting. And so when you ask, like, where did that come from? I think the three of us are always thinking about, you know, how can we make the rally not necessarily bigger, but how can we surprise and delight people? And how can we give a person an experience when they come around the bend that they're not expecting? And a lot of that happens organically. You know, if you're willing to explore and really take on the ethos that Overcrest embodies, you're going to discover those things. But to have a set piece moment also in the middle of nowhere, I think gave people an opportunity to discover that a little more planned.
So what was the biggest challenge that you had creating this? What was the toughest part of doing it?
You know, I think that if I'm being really honest, the hardest thing is not being able to involve every brand and every friend and buddy that we have. Because even within the three of us, you know, there are several people who are like, why don't we involve them? Why don't we involve them? Getting all the product out into the middle of the Eastern Oregon desert and having it be set up, you know, a day in advance, because it was quite an involved production. And then having, you know, as Jake knows, being able to take payment in the middle of nowhere without cell phone service, you know, all these, the location really was the biggest challenge. But I think my heart, the biggest challenge is not being able to, like, let more brands in. If I'm being really honest, I think there would have been some really cool things with more brands, and, you know, maybe in the future we'll find some cool ways to do that.
Yeah, speaking of the location, Jeff, and the challenges that went along with it, I think that's what made it so special when you're talking about, you know, delighting people. And it was something that people stumbled upon and discovered. And I think it's really cool how you were able to curate that experience. And it was this sense of whimsy. You know, when I was trying to explain to some people what this was,
I don't think I've ever heard anybody use whimsy not in a movie.
Is it not accurate?
It was whimsical.
It was totally whimsical.
It is. You're not wrong. It's just we did something that can be used. We can use a word that nobody ever uses. That's good.
Whimsy.
Right?
Yeah, it's whimsical.
I think whimsy works. You know, our shopkeeper were these two retired folks in their 60s that had a whole gypsy hippie outfit on, and they really got into it. Kevin had 2,100 songs on his playlist, and he had music pumping through the place. So it was very, it had a lot of heart and a lot of whimsy. And that word works.
There's a word you could have the whimsies. I'm looking on the e-old dictionary now. Give you the whimsies, which sounds more like if you get off of a merry-go-round, you've got the whimsies.
The whimsies. Yeah, I don't want those. We're going to give up the whimsies. That's next year's theme.
Well, when you guys, you know, you guys knew enough about what this was going to be. You knew kind of what it was going to be, but this was your, like, you didn't know exactly. So when you pulled up, what did you guys think? Like, Chris, you were there earlier, and then Jake, you were there at the very end.
Right.
So when I got there, there was a lot of people there. You know, I kind of got there. I don't know if it was in the densest part of it or not, but I pulled in, and first thing I noticed was, okay, so to set this up, there was for people that weren't there, unfortunately, there was a shop, and they had all the cool shit in it with our stuff and partner stuff and other creators that we involved. And then there was another tent that had just some couches, pillows, hanging out, you know, and everything was kind of decorated, for lack of a better term, very well. It was a great theme. And you had that going on. There's people in the tent. And I also looked down by the river, and people had lined up chairs down at the river, and they were, like, chucking rocks in the river. And what it seemed like was, like, wow, this is its own – it is its own unique thing, offering its own experience outside of driving, which is when people look at something like the rally, they're like, oh, people that haven't done it, their instinct is, like, this is all about driving. We're going to go drive, right? We're going to go, we're going to drive the cars. We're going to drive them. We're going to drive these motherfuckers into the ground. But this gave the distinct element of having experience outside of driving, having an experience of camaraderie, being together, decompressing, getting away from the car, but still in the culture of exploration. It was really special. It was like can I say whimsical oasis? Does that work?
Ooh, I like that. Look at that. A whimsical oasis. It was indeed.
It's 1 degree off of whimsy.
Yeah, it gave me the whimsies for sure. So, Jake, tell me about the odds that you're going to own a BMW 2002 at any point in the near future. What do you think?
I was really looking forward to this ahead of time. I was like, that's a really cool car. I love the vintage of it. I'm not ever going to ever.
No, it's ruined for life.
Oh, yeah, no. I'm
really?
Done. Nope.
Oh, really? Man.
Yep, nope,
you,
done.
But you finally did get to drive it when it was in decent operational shape.
It was fine.
To bring everybody up to speed, Jake and Jeff obtained a BMW 2002, a 76, to drive on the rally instead of driving it, driving their own cars out there, which is fine. Right. I mean, this year we probably got to experience the least amount of rally experience of any of the previous rallies. We really didn't experience too much other than traversing from thing to thing, which is great. We love giving everybody the experience. But you guys needed a car to drive. Mm-hmm. So we had the van, which mm-hmm. we didn't think we're going to be driving. So you guys mm-hmm. had the 2002.
Yes, we did.
We got the 2002 the owner is Chris Ryan, my partner at Kilo, and he's got several cars. And I thought, well, why not the 2002? Like, I rallied in that car in 2016, 2017 with Chris on some other rallies, and it's a great car. I like it. And he recently had the engine rebuilt, so it's got 10-to-1 compression. It's got, you know, new suspension. Anyway, it's a fun little car. So he, you know, Jake and I sent him a little money ahead of time so we didn't have to rent a car. Like, here you go. Get it sorted. So we put new tires on it and it went through some of the bushing and suspension stuff and then had a mechanic sort it beforehand and supposedly did a valve job.
At the it was at the Portland Zoo, the mechanic, I think. Yep. Was
I think so. I'm
like this Jeff, close to saying the mechanic's name.
Don't do it.
We don't do it. I'm keeping my mouth shut here, Jeff, because I don't even know if you want to go into this and
no, put it's a fun
negative
story.
Vibes
it's
out
a,
there.
It turned into a success in the end.
Here's what happened. I'm trying to think how
it starts running. We leave Portland
poorly when you leave Portland, right?
Yeah.
And it is flooding, like it's just dumping fuel in the intake manifold. And I was trying to figure
out. You can see
it.
You can look in the carb and you can see like Lake Lagasse.
This is when Chris decided to say, okay, I need to head out. I'm going to go to Eastern Oregon. You guys have fun. And so.
That's not true.
That is 100% what happened.
No, it is absolutely not true. It was, Jake, here's all my tools. Mm-hmm. Here's all my jets, some of which will fit this carburetor.
The only thing you left with me was spark plugs.
I did leave you some spark plugs, but eventually we're like, okay, we took the carburetor apart. You were there when we did it all.
First of all, okay.
I abandoned you because I definitely did not abandon you.
No, we were staying there for the night, and you had to get over to the east side of Oregon.
Right.
But you did not have any of the excitement of working on this car. So, yeah, we were like, it's flooding really bad. Let's take a look. We open up the carburetor. Every single fastener on that carburetor
wasn't
even hand tight. Like, was not even turned in all the way.
This is a primer, the guys that care, which you have quite a bit of experience with.
I have.
And I do, too. It was on.
Yeah, rebuilt.
It's a very common carburetor kit to put on.
Yep.
Yeah, you could put them on old BMWs, old inline sixes.
I completely rebuilt one to use as a blow-through turbo setup, so I have a lot of experience with these. And so this was not the original carb to a 2002, by the way. This was a Redline Weber conversion kit where it takes the manifold. Yep, exactly. And also it gets rid of the mechanical fuel pump. So there's a mechanical fuel pump block off plate, and you use an electric pump pumping things forward. And what this car had with the conversion had was a fuel pressure regulator, because this electric pump, as we later found out, was putting up a lot more fuel pressure than that Weber would like.
Because you only need just a dribble.
3.5 PSI is the target.
Which you can blow more than 3 or 4 PSI with your mouth. I mean, it is very, very little.
Maybe you can with all that experience, but I can't.
Okay.
Blowing hot air. Anyways, jeez. So we're like, this had a fuel pressure regulator on it. And that's something that this mechanic told our friend Chris that was removed because, quote, 2002s don't need fuel pressure regulators, which is true. If it had factory carburetor and a factory fuel pump, which it does not.
Yep.
And so he removed the fuel pressure regulator and put a new fuel line directly from the fuel line to the carburetor. And I go, well, it's getting way too much fuel.
Because you could see it. I mean, you could
pressure regulator.
I was looking down the carburetor with the butterflies open.
It's not running. Yep. And it's seeping fuel in between the top hat and the bottom component of the carburetor. Like, we're
just pouring fuel in.
Just pouring. Yes. Not good. So I was like, well, either the float is set incorrectly, the needle is completely garbage, or it's getting way too much fuel. It turned out being probably all three of those things. So went to the auto parts store, got a fuel pressure regulator and a gauge, found out after putting it on that pump was putting out 8 PSI to the Weber carb, which is way too much. It's like three
times. Well, thank God you fixed it with this. You found the problem. You fixed it. Oh, there was an ignition thing, too.
One of the problems. One of those problems. There were several problems, Chris. So.
Well, so Jake and I stayed in the Dalles. We were getting the pop-up ready, and Jake stayed. He worked on that car for like 3 hours while I was doing pop-up organizing and whatnot, and we were cataloging product. And so it's well into the evening. It's dark. Jake's working on her light, gets it fixed, fires it up, running great. Great.
Love it.
The next morning, Jake heads out in the van to Eastern Oregon.
Hold on.
And we had a
You missed a whole part of another thing that was wrong. Okay, so there was no fuel pressure regulator. It was getting way too much fuel. I believe this mechanic also did like an ignition tune-up. So plugs, wires, cap, and rotor, right? Well, you know a standard distributor and the cap has two prongs that hold the cap on. And so it only goes one of two ways, and there's a notch on the cap, so it only
goes
one way. Right, it's keyed. Well, the guy had it 180 degrees off, so the key did not sit in the distributor. Therefore, the entire cap was like cockeyed, so it wasn't getting good contact.
That's what we call cattywampus.
That was very cattywampus specifically.
Textbook
cattywampus. So I took it off to like look at just the contacts on the rotor. I was like, yeah, it's kind of doesn't look brand new. That's weird. And so I put it back and I go to start it and it wouldn't even fire. And I'm like, what is going on? Back to basics, right? We're getting fuel. We're getting spark because I pulled, and then I start tracing wires and I go, how the hell is the wire order completely wrong? This thing was just running. Well, then I realized he had the cap on wrong to begin with. So then I reordered the plugs and it fired right up. Then it was running awesome, like a top. It was running so well, in fact, that it finally got up to proper temperature, which is great, Chris. And
yeah,
so
that's awesome.
The next morning, we're off.
You're off.
While you're doing this, by the way, I had my karma situation for leaving you there. Is it took me 6 or 7 hours, maybe 7 or 8 hours, to get to Boise from the Dalles. It was pouring shitting rain the entire way. It was
shitting
the most
rain.
Miserable drive I think I've ever been on. There was trucks everywhere. The 911, the hydroplane, if you have less than a tank of gas, so I had to keep stopping and getting gas and filling it up. Donna was freaked out because she hasn't driven a lot in those.
She
nobody
said that
has.
Was very, very bad.
It was
very inclement.
It was
weather.
Awful. It was some of the worst driving I've ever had to do. So I paid my price. I should have stayed with you.
There you go. Sure. So you were driving the 2002, Jeff, I think. Yes.
So then
yeah,
it was,
you took the van.
Yeah, the next morning, Jake, you headed out early. We had a few more hours on the pop-up work. And so Chase, who works for me and was on the film crew this year, he was in the 2002 with us. And we head out, the two of us, out of the Dalles, and we're not more than 15 miles out of town, and the car is stuttering, staggering, having some issues. And as you know, once you get east of the Dalles, there's nothing. I mean, it just turns into nothing on I-84. Yeah, so stopped 20 minutes. You know, I'm talking to Jake over the phone. We're trying to figure out, you know, I'm going up and down with the pressure regulator, trying to let more fuel in. I'm
also trying to play with timing. I was like, maybe the timing is way off, you know, because the plugs were all, yeah.
So
you ended up limping.
Instead of getting to Boise, we got to North Powder. So we fell two and a half hours short because it was already getting dark when we got to North Powder. And it must have taken 7 to 8 hours to do a 3.5-hour drive, 3-hour drive. It was every gap we were stopping. I was constantly playing with the fuel mixture, with the regulator. I was pulling my hair out because I couldn't figure out what was going on. We would start the car and it would run great for like 5 minutes, and then it would start in again. And it was like, well, I didn't, you know. So we get to North Powder, registration's going on. We're trying to, like, what is going on with
this
thing?
Actually, didn't I go to Boise by myself?
Yes.
And so you were trying to fuss with it as I went to Boise and then came back.
Because we had to register day zero, folks. Yeah, we had all the registration stuff was in the van.
This is why we were so busy. I traversed the state 3 times, I'm pretty sure, back and forth. Because there was other issues, including a rental car.
We got to North Powder and you know, you guys were doing day zero pre-reg.
Yep.
Jake came up during that next morning for registration. Chris was on day zero that morning. And, you know, Jake's not even wanting to look at this car at this point. You know, it's like...
Did you? You didn't want to either, I'm sure.
No, I spent all day futzing with this thing. Like, I couldn't figure it out. So, anyway, people start pouring in. And Mike Burrows hears that there's a car that needs to be worked on, you know? And it's like, he's not going to stand around doing nothing.
Hold on, Jeff. You're getting the order wrong here. Because it was the night before when I got in late, or whenever it was. And you're like, yeah, it's just not running right. I go, whatever, we'll just park it here, worst case, or we'll look at it in the morning. And it's before we're setting up for registration, I go out there, and I'm futzing. And I look, and it has an inline fuel filter up front, right? And it's clear, the little clear plastic ones. And I go, holy shit. It's bright green in there.
Neon green.
Neon green.
It looks like Ecto Cooler. Like, if it's green.
And so,
like, green.
Immediately, I'm like, that looks like antifreeze. That's weird. And so we called the gas station. And we're like, is this some weird blend that you're doing? Is this like an early St. Patrick's Day version of gas or something? And they were like...
Well, I thought, like, in my head, maybe there's some... Like, usually
additive.
You have farm diesel.
Yeah.
You have farm diesel with no tax. But it's dyed red.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Pull up to it. Like, in some rural places, there's no tax on diesel for farms. But they'll stick a cotton swab thing into your gas tank. If they pull out red, it's a huge fine.
Oh, interesting.
Because there's no taxes on farm diesel.
So you're like, I don't know.
So I thought maybe there's
green gas.
Yeah, but like, it's usually not gasoline. It's usually diesel for tractors
and
so
we're
trucks.
Trying to figure it out. It's so weird, right? And so, yeah, well, you end up calling the gas station and the attendant because you're like, call them. Just see if they would know. And I asked the lady and she goes, the conversation was funny enough as it is. I go, hey, random question. Is your grass green? Yes, it is green. No, is your gas green? She's like, what are you talking about? I was like, yeah, we just filled up there. I'm just curious, you know, trying to troubleshoot if the fuel is green. She goes, well, we have a green pump. You know, it's diesel. And I'm like, no. Is the actual fuel, the liquid, green? She goes, I don't know. That's a weird question.
Okay. I'm going to jump in and we're going to rewind a little more. Night before, Jake had gotten there very late, and he went outside to get something, do something, and the red 2002 and the van were parked right out in front of our Airbnb. It's a very small town.
Very, very small town.
And Jake looks down the street, and there's several people out in the street. And it's like, what, midnight, Jake?
Yeah, it's after midnight.
Like, it's late.
With
and they're painting, and
they're
talking.
Like doing
and
something in the street, and it's kind of a messy-looking household.
Would you call them miscreants? Do they seem like miscreants?
That was my perception
thereof. Street urchins.
Yes, that was my perception thereof at the time. And so I was like, I didn't think anything of it other than like, that's weird. Like, should we be worried about our cars out here? I don't know what they're doing. Who's like, what's going on? And the next morning, I see they had painted no parking in front of their house on the street, mm-hmm. which Barb, who's absolutely delightful and worked at the little town Grange, said that, well, that's not allowed. They shouldn't be doing that. And so I was thinking, maybe they didn't like us. And then what comes into my mind? This was sabotage.
Antifreeze in the gas
Someone
tank.
Someone poured antifreeze in the gas tank.
Because it was
the only way
antifreeze.
It was antifreeze. We pulled it off.
It was.
It's antifreeze. It has that like that sickly sweet smell. And I was like, that's antifreeze. The only way antifreeze can get in the gas tank is if someone puts it there. Those systems do not cross over. There's no coolant that should go to your fuel tank, right?
Sometimes in an intake manifold, you'll have like a
you're right.
like a crossover where coolant warms up the carburetor.
Yep, it was a water-cooled intake manifold, which I then took apart that morning and checked everything. And sure, yeah, it looked good. Couldn't figure it out. I go,
it's water-warmed intake manifold, by the way. That's for warming up the carburetor.
We, at that point, figure, okay, well, somebody sabotaged the car. They poured antifreeze
and
in the gas
tank. And it makes sense that
don't forget,
locals
hold on.
Who didn't want us there were out late
don't
at
Don't forget,
night.
I pulled the radiator cap, and what was in the radiator?
This one we couldn't figure out. The radiator smelled like fuel. It smelled like gasoline. Straight up gasoline.
There was gasoline in the radiator.
In the coolant system.
We didn't put two and two together on that. Yeah,
no, we thought maybe they put gas in the radiator. That's weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then I was like, maybe the head gasket is so bad, and when it flooded, it like pushed like fuel into the past the cylinders.
But the volume of gas in there still didn't make sense.
It didn't make
sense. Because
whatever. Regardless, we were convinced it was sabotage. We told Barb. Barb told the mayor. The mayor told the police.
And the mayor showed up.
It was a
big deal.
The
mayor of North Powder.
It was a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was bad news for those guys, right? And so, all right, what are we going to do? Well, I'm working on registration, Burroughs and those other guys. Everyone, what I love about our rally, a lot of rallies, but specifically ours, I think, where it's unique, people get so excited when there's something to fix, right? When someone's broken down, it's like people just glom on and go, all right, let's do it. Everyone has all of their tools there. I swear, with everyone combined, you could rebuild just about everything on that rally.
Oh, yeah. Easily.
So
the only thing you're missing is a machine shop.
Right. So
Mike and Byron from Lightbow went and got some jugs from the truck stop. Like, I mean, it was a full crew on this one car.
Drain the gas tank. That's what they did. Drain the tank, put new fuel in it, running well. You or Chris takes it around the block after registration. It's running great. And I go, okay, cool. I'm gonna try because I wanna see what it feels like now that it's actually running well, and I didn't get to really drive it that hard. I made it two miles, and it just was blowing white smoke and conked out. I opened the hood, bright green fuel filter. I'm like, son of a. I figure, well, they didn't get all of it out of the tank.
We didn't drain it all.
And when you drove it, it shook it up.
Exactly.
It shook it up and agitated it.
That's exactly what happened. So we drained it again. And got on the road, pushed it a little hard, still green fuel. What in the heck? I thought we got all of it out. I go, you know what? I'm not screwing around. This stupid tank is contaminated. So I had a jerry can. I unplugged the fuel pump from the fuel tank, put it in the jerry can, taped it up. Now I'm pulling straight fuel from a jerry can. Runs great. Runs awesome. Smooth. That was the problem. Got it nice and warm. Turn it off. Oh, gosh, no. By this point, we were on day one of the rally, Jeff.
No.
Because we didn't figure this out. Okay, we didn't figure this out until the party.
We figured it out.
At the party.
Yes.
Right after Haynes Steakhouse on the way over to...
Yep.
Yeah, after the steakhouse on the way over to Austin's house party.
We turn it off. and we hear a gurgling, which is just weird. I was like, huh, that must be the radiator overflow or whatever. And we're like, I forget what we were trying to figure out. Oh, the gurgling came from the gas tank. I was like, that's weird. What is going on? And we take the cover off the tank. I look at like the fuel line and the return line. I was worried something was going on there. And I touch the return line and it's hot. The fuel return line is hot to the touch. That shouldn't do that.
Ever.
I'm like, what? What? I'm like, is the return line, did it like had something, there was like a fire maybe? And so like it crossed over with the heater core in the like under the car. No, that doesn't make sense. So then I go to the front of the car and you can see the little radiator overflow tube going down. I'm like, well, okay, let me just make sure that this isn't like hooked up weird. And I'm like, huh, that's weird. It's like goes, I can't follow it. It's really dark. It's late at night. I can't follow where the overflow return tube goes. And I pull it off and I blow into it and you hear bubbling in the gas tank.
Unreal.
So here's what happened. The mechanic who removed the fuel pressure regulator that doesn't need to be on 2002s, guys. That previous fuel pressure regulator had a return line. It was a return setup, right? Pumps in a circle. You just take the fuel pressure that you want to the carb. Well, he removed it, put new fuel line directly to the carb. Probably, I don't know, went for a sandwich or something. Came back and he goes, huh, wonder where this hose came from, the return line. This is the only way I can think he would logically do this. Is you go, I don't remember where that went. Oh, radiator. There's no overflow tube. Plug it in there. So it ran fine until it got up to temperature. Then the radiator bled off coolant into the gas tank. And once it cooled down, just as an overflow tube is supposed to do, it siphoned back up into the radiator, which was now fuel.
Yep.
So it was the most asinine thing I'd ever encountered. It took us so long to figure this out. Because who would think of this? How would this happen? How would this happen? It's honestly the most, like, just dubious prank you could ever do to anyone if you had thought of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, now that it's out in the world.
So we go out in the middle of nowhere outside of Baker City.
Oh, no, I forgot about this.
This is maybe the part you should redact. We had to get rid of some fuel because it was mixed with the – anyway, we got rid of it.
In an EPA-approved manner.
Oh, 100%. So we put fresh fuel in it. Car ran great. Like, 2 days of rallying, ran awesome. I drove the wheels off it day one. It was a blast.
Yeah, fuel makes a great coolant additive because it works just like antifreeze. It doesn't freeze. It's great, you guys.
It's true.
That part worked great.
Yeah. Anyway, I enjoyed driving at that point. And I think at that point, Jake had such disdain and hatred in his heart for this car.
Because
we had spent hours with it in the middle of the rally, which, you know, the three of us are, we're doing a million things, answering a million questions, trying to put out fires. Yep. And here we were spending all our time in this car. Yep. So,
and then I had to go back to North Powder and sit down with Barb and tell her that her town is not full of miscreants.
That was really good of you to do. I was going to send her a letter or something, but you wouldn't talk to her. That's really good for them to know that their town isn't full of jerk-offs. Although it might be, but
I mean,
they didn't. Nobody did anything
to
us.
Yeah. So that is the tale of the Curse 2002. I will never own one. I'm so over it.
Great.
Even when it ran right. Oh, I pushed it then. Remember, like, I drove it for the last little bit back to wherever we were going, to Malala, and I found this really, like, the most epic twisty back way into Malala. I was just, like, driving. I look at Google Maps and go, oh, this kind of goes away around and back to the film fest, and I beat you in the van, which I'm really proud of, because you took the direct route. So that tells you something. So I pushed it.
Yep.
Yeah, didn't make up for its shortcomings. It did not redeem itself to me.
Other thing I want to talk about before we cut it out. Obviously, the 2002 is now legendary. That's a legendary car. I like the sticker that Donuts and Drip made. It say this car shit the bed on Overcrest.
Yeah, that is
that car
most appropriately deserved.
Yeah, we should have some of those for sale for anybody else that had any trouble. I know there was some. The Dodge Viper wore out his power steering pump.
Yeah.
which, you know, they're not really supposed to turn straight line only, right? But that thing wore out his power steering pump.
Another reason that I want a Viper and will sell everything I own to get a Viper is because he went to the local auto parts store in the middle of nowhere, and they're like, yeah, of course we have one in stock. It's just, that's the same power steering pump for like a Dodge Caravan. Of course we have one.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You can fix that thing absolutely anywhere. So I wanted to, before we hop off, I wanted to mention what we're doing next year for plans, because I know there was a little bit of confusion when our screen got, the film festival lost power, which it's amazing that the film festival circuit didn't blow some other time during the film. Like, it like made it like 99.9% of the way through, and then we were...
Last minute, we lost power.
And we were going to announce, of course, because, and I think...
Yeah, if you didn't see it, we said we were announcing where the rally's going to be in the spring.
Stay for the credits. Stay for the credits.
Yep, we told everyone that. And it's like, all right, I think we're going to go, and then... And the screen was inflatable and started deflating immediately. And everyone's like, that's clever, guys. That's pretty cool. It's cool that you got the screen to deflate, too. Like, that's impressive.
Well planned. So we basically want to announce the Overcrest rally redux, which is going to be, we're going to try and do two rallies a year because we really want to be as inclusive as we can to everybody and see if we can get some more people to come. This will allow twice as many people to experience Overcrest, which is incredible. That's what we really want, is to have as many people experience this as possible without changing what it is. Because if we change what it is and start letting a million people in, it won't be Overcrest anymore, and it won't be what people know and love. So this is kind of our compromise and figure out what we're going to do. So we're going to go back to Utah next year,
Then
maybe the year after that we'll go somewhere else that we've already been. But the Utah Redux, or the Redux, is going to start in Utah. So I'm really excited. I've been planning routes, been looking. I want to shake it up a little bit. I don't want it to be exactly the same.
Can we please go to the Swinging Steak?
I have bad news, Jake.
What?
They renamed the Swinging Steak.
What is it?
It is now Mexican Hat Grill, formerly known as the Swinging Steak.
Are you serious?
There's a...
But there's still a Swinging Steak there.
Bad branding move. I'm sorry.
That's terrible.
The thing I'm most excited about going back is, like you said before, there's a lot of people, especially in the last 2 or 3 years, who've discovered Overcrest, who've discovered the rally, what we do, kind of our formula that's different than what's being done in other rallies, and they want to come, and we got so overwhelmed with applications. And I think you guys will agree with me, the worst day of the year is going through the applications and realizing that there's going to be hundreds of cars that can't come. And and so the Redux gives us this opportunity to go back to one of, you know, Utah's iconic, the visuals, the vistas, just the scene. It's amazing.
It was magical. It really was.
Yeah. And so I would just tell people too, if you've been on all the rallies, like, this might be the one to, I mean, hey, apply if you want to come, but also we're going to try to get some new blood in. Some people who haven't experienced it, it gives us that opportunity to share the experience with more people. I'm really pumped to see all these new people who've been wanting to go experience this. It's going to be awesome.
You know,
and then we'll have the so there's not going to be a film festival with this one. We're just going to we'll throw a party, you know, at the end. We'll do something fun. But the Overcrest Rally, the one that everybody knows and loves, that's a secret we're not going to tell anybody where it is still going to be in the fall. And that's where the film festival will be. And that's, I mean, that's all the information we can give right there. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, and pay attention.
There's one other thing.
But I do want to say one thing that I think will make it easier to like call through applications this next year is that if there's any 2002s, they're immediately denied.
I'm sure Chris Ryan is just really enjoying this. The worst thing, honestly, I told you guys this. I feel bad because he just had antifreeze run through his engine, like for
it's clean.
A couple days.
It is steam cleaned, baby.
Yeah,
there you go.
That's a combustion chamber treatment. I mean, that's elite. It's tough to get that.
I don't know. I still love 2002. But the other thing I'll say is the one thing about the fall, it's gonna be crazy.
It is.
Oh gosh,
I'm excited about it. I can't wait to go scout. I'm trying to. We're gonna have to figure out the logistics of when I go and when we announce and how we're going to do it this year. It's going to be a little bit different because I'm scouting earlier, but I'm really excited to do it and really excited to share and discover a new scholarship car so we can share that experience
again.
Yeah,
we didn't even talk about the scholarship program that we did, and those guys were absolutely great out there at the rally. I think this totally opened their eyes to a totally unique experience, right?
Yeah, those guys that are normally like hot rod guys were looking at E30s on Facebook Marketplace. Yep. So yep. They have been converted for sure, for sure. All right, guys, that's it. We'll leave it there for now. Jeff, thanks for coming to hang out with us for a minute. Jake, yeah. It was good to do this with you again.
Absolutely.
And I think this next week, Jeff and I are going to SEMA. So if you're at SEMA, look us up. Come find us. We'll be around, wandering around, getting our 40,000 steps in a day, going to look at all the stuff.
They're telling me we're not even going to be able to get there because of all the F1 construction.
Read that.
It takes nearly an hour to go 4 miles, they said, in Vegas right now because of all the F1 track construction. Yeah. So we might see
that'll be fun.
We might see you there.
Well, maybe it'll be 60,000 steps when we walk there
Is that where the weird new dome thing is? Is that in Vegas?
No, that's like a concert venue.
Yeah, but that's in Vegas.
Sphere?
The Sphere?
Yeah, that's in Vegas.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And then, so we're going to do work. I'm going to have there's an episode that I recorded for Drivers Club members.
That's right.
Which is the story of the Driven to Death car. It's a story I wrote about it, and I narrated it for everybody. And then I released it as it has a lot to do with mental health and some issues with that.
So
and
you
I released,
released
it as
to,
a Drivers Club.
Yeah, Drivers Club members.
Drivers Club. And they all were like, dude, you gotta release this publicly. So we're gonna do that for the week after while we're at SEMA. And then we'll be back to do a SEMA recap.
And then I have a whole stack of history stories to get through.
All right, well, take it easy. Let's keep it under control. I got some interviews to do as well. So,
and
I've kind of got there's a new formula that we're going to start doing.
What is that?
I'm going to start structuring this out a little bit.
Okay.
I love doing news and updates with you.
Yes.
I love that. It's so fun. I love the history stuff.
Yep.
It's so fun. I love the interviews.
Yeah.
They're so fun. So we're going to try and do one of each every month. And try and have some sort of schedule that makes sense so I can get my mind around what we're actually doing.
Yeah. One history, one interview, one news, one projects or something.
Sure.
Guys, it was fun to come on with you. I have one request as my appearance fee, and that is everyone listening to this, send your Bring a Trailer listings and your Facebook Marketplace listings for the 2002 to Jake.
Oh, God, no.
There you go. There you go.
Okay, bye.
Well, we'll see you guys next week.
Take care.